hoping that you understand. You ain't the man to tell you in demand. Just pray to God we keep you in the plan. You ain't the man to tell you in it.
Hey there, welcome to Time Out with Ty. We're back again to talk a subject that's half close to my heart and half, I mean, sort of close to my heart. And that's the box. If you don't know what the box is, it's sort of this co-fandom between the Bucks, the Milwaukee Bucks, and the Atlanta Hawks. I have no idea how it started. Two teams that have been kind of similar. I mean, the Hawks have been better over the past few years, but both teams really haven't gotten much national respect. Even when the Hawks were good, people didn't respect them nearly enough. Maybe it's the blogging communities that have been sort of intertwined that did it, but whenever the Bucks play the Hawks, it's always fun on Twitter because you get box Twitter for the night. I have a box expert here with me today to talk Bucks and Hawks and maybe some more stuff, and that is KL Chouinard. I hope I said that right this time. What's
That's
up?
Good.
Did I get KL right at least?
Yeah, you did a great job on the K and the L. Both.
Good. That's what I was hoping for.
Yeah, and we've got Larry Drew and Gustavo Ayon, and I don't know. There's a lot of common threads there. Zaza for sure.
Zaza,
big in the box community, right?
Oh yeah. Especially, I mean, Adam McGee mostly. Like Adam McGee probably accounts for 90% of Zaza Bucks tweets at this point, but there's still like another 10% out there.
There you go.
Jeff Teague is another one. The Jeff Teague almost signing. I mean, he's gone now, but I wanted to first ask you about Hawks stuff, because I haven't talked too much Hawks lately.
Okay.
So, how do you feel about the Jeff Teague trade? This was a little while ago. This was back on draft day, if I'm not mistaken. Hopefully I'm not. But Teague went to the Pacers, George Hill went to the Jazz, and a draft pick came to the Hawks, which is weird, because usually the Hawks, recent years, haven't done too much drafting. So it's a little bit of a different approach. How do you like the trade?
I mean, it's interesting. You know, it helps some things and, you know, leaves some other things open. You know, most notably, I think the one biggest area of concern is that last year, you know, even though it was confusing who was really the point guard of the day at times, because sometimes, you know, they just go with the hot hand. Now they've got the issue of, you know, well, we're not going to have a really good point guard on the floor for 48 minutes. That was a nice luxury to have last year. And so, it makes things tricky. And so now the question is, well, who's going to be the backup point guard? And, you know, the Hawks signed two backup point guards in the offseason. I'm kind of glad they went the route they did. They didn't really get into overpaying somebody who might not necessarily be worth it. They got a couple of reasonable deals in signing Malcolm Delaney and Jarrett Jack. And so they didn't really get too much into the business of, you know, sort of overpaying for the same sort of tired candidates who always seem to be the backup point guards, whether they're really that good or not. So they signed Malcolm Delaney, who's sort of been all over Europe in the last 3 or 4 years. And he seems to, you know, have, had playoffs and, you know, tournament success everywhere that he's gone. He's sort of an interesting, almost like a combo guard kind of player, a guy who can shoot really well, pass. He isn't that big, but it'll be interesting to see. He's got a nice mix of skills. And then Jarrett Jack, who should be able to do some things coming home to Atlanta if he's healthy.
Yeah, I really like the Jack signing. I mean, people were down on him last year. His shooting percentages were pretty bad, but his assist numbers were the best they've ever been. And even if he's not that much of a shooter in Atlanta, I feel like if he can distribute the ball pretty well, they have enough weapons to work with. One of the most noteworthy ones is a new addition this summer, Dwight Howard. That was maybe one of the biggest surprises to me. Obviously, Kevin Durant, Warriors, has to come in at number one. But certainly, like, top three, at least top five, was the Atlanta Hawks, a.k.a. Spurs East, a.k.a. one of the most careful franchises, going big with Dwight Howard. And obviously, Al Horford getting sort of moved. He left, but I don't think anyone, maybe some people would want to. I don't know that many people would like switching out Horford for Howard, but how do you feel about it, you know, now that it's been a month or two since it happened?
I mean, I think you have to look at it in the context of what the situation was and what the timing was. You know, Horford didn't sign right away, And so, you know, one of the things that the Hawks were sort of facing was the prospect of, you know, trying to get Horford this year, and then make, you know, does he sign this year? Does he go away? They didn't know at that point. And, you know, Paul Millsap's going to be a free agent next year. So you got the, sort of the two cornerstones of your franchise up for grabs this summer and next. And I think, you know, while they were waiting out Horford's decision, I think they took a proactive approach to thinking, you know, we can't come up, you know, holding two empty bags instead of just one. The prospect of what happens with Millsap next summer, I think, weighed heavily on them. And that's just, you know, me speculating. But, you know, with the two cornerstones up for grabs in the next 12 months, that was an issue. And so I think they took the approach of, you know, what can we do to sort of hedge our bets a little bit? And, you know, they didn't have to give Howard a max contract to come, not really anything near it. It was a 3-year contract. So, I mean, I think they got a pretty good value there. And so, you know, he's going to bring some strengths to this team that they haven't had in a while. They're going to be able to play above the rim. They're going to be able to, you know, get defensive rebounds in big situations. And that leaves some question marks, too. You know, there's going to be the whole Hack of Howard thing. That could be something. You know, how does his presence not spacing the floor in the way that Horford would, you know, change how the game is going to look for Dennis Schroeder when he's a starter for the first time? That's going to be an interesting question. And, you know, how does the ball movement work? You know, when you had Teague, Korver, Millsap, Horford, and, you know, either Damari Carroll or Kent Bazemore, the ball was flying around. You know, with Schroeder and Howard in there, what is the ball movement going to look like? Because that's really been the signature for the Hawks the last couple of seasons, and that could change.
Do you think they're going to run some more pick and roll this year? I feel like Schroeder and Millsap, and definitely Schroeder and Dwight Howard, like, that could be some pretty dangerous pick and rolls. Like, obviously, it feels, I don't know if wrong might be dramatic, but it feels weird to not see a Hawks team predicated around that, the motion offense. But it just feels like maybe at this point they need to shift from it a little bit.
Shift, I'm sorry, say that one more time.
Like, does it just feel like they kind of need to shift a little bit away from ball movement towards some other styles on offense with the new personnel?
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I've actually got a piece up on the Hawks website right now where, you know, I've got just so many people saying the same thing, which was, we've got Howard and he's going to put pressure on the rim. Budenholzer said pressure on the rim. Schroeder said pressure on the rim. GM Wes Wilcox says pressure on the rim. I mean, I think they had the ball movement, but they needed some kind of action that forced the defense to overplay so that the ball movement was a sufficient penalty for that overplaying. You know, ball movement isn't that great when you're just guarding five guys on five guys and you don't sort of have a mismatch anywhere. So I think what they're looking to is, you know, they want to play pick and roll. They already did play a lot of pick and roll.
Yeah.
But I think they want a pick and roll that teams have to overreact to so that they can counter with the ball movement once defenses overcommit to defending that pick and roll. And the T. Horford pick and roll, I don't know that it forced that kind of overcommitment in the same way that Schroeder Howard might.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that. I mean, I think Howard is he's just bigger, obviously. I mean, I think Al Horford, I think, is a great defender, but he kind of reminds me, and this is a ridiculous comparison, but I'm not comparing the players, just sort of their styles, of a Zaza-esque sort of defender where he's very good one-on-one, but the verticality isn't there. Like, I don't think Al Horford's like a rim protector, although he's still a good defender. It's like a different thing. So Horford will certainly add that to them. There'll be more rebounding, which was really the one area the Hawks just could not keep up with Cleveland in. I mean, I always thought, you know, Cleveland would be the better team. They have LeBron James, of course. If you have LeBron James, you're probably going to the finals if you're in the Eastern Conference. It's been 7 straight years now, I think. But I thought they would play them closer in the last 2 years. Obviously, there were injuries the first time. But really, I mean, Tristan Thompson was huge. Like, the offensive rebounding was huge for the Cavs and defensive. Dwight Howard doesn't get rebounded over like that, or at least he hasn't. I feel like that's going to add a lot to them. I feel like there's really not a much better place Howard could have gone than Atlanta. there's not going to be nearly as much drama here. Like, there's no James Harden. There's no Kobe Bryant. And I don't think Howard was sort of this maligned player with the Magic. He's played with these high-profile, dramatic shooting guards since then, two times in a row, and hasn't worked out too well. I feel like Atlanta will be able to settle in and have fun again. I'm actually looking forward to this team next year.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I would disagree a little bit on the Horford. I think over the last couple of years, both he and Millsap have gotten really comfortable in the defense. They've gotten good at the verticality rule, using that to the utmost advantage, as well as, you know, blocking shots and protecting the rim. And I think at the same time, Howard will just continue that. I don't think he's going to have an issue. He might not be as good as Horford when it comes to, you know, trapping or doubling out on the perimeter or closing out on jump shooters. But I think as far as protecting the rim, he's going to continue what Horford was already doing. But then the rebounding, absolutely. I mean, that's been a huge issue for the Hawks, especially in the postseasons the last couple of years. And I think Dwight Howard, you know, that was one of the things I wrote about. I think he's really undersold as being one of the best, you know, defensive rebounders of the last 40 years, you know, since they track the numbers on defensive rebounds. He's really one of the best. And if you look at his numbers starting with the season he played in LA, his defensive rebounding percentages have actually gotten better each of the last three seasons.
Oh, wow.
So it's, you know, even though he's coming into his age 31 season, he hasn't, it's not like he's, you know, even if he does regress a little bit, it's not like it's been a part of this continuing regression. If it would just be the first season where there'd be a regression. So, you know, even if he steps back a little bit, he's stepping back from a place really of greatness. You know, he's one of the best defensive rebounders, not just, you know, in the conference or this season. He's been one of the best of all time. And, you know, it's not like he's gotten so old that's really gone anywhere. He's been a great defensive rebounder, even the last few seasons.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch the new dynamic. I feel like a little bit the jettisoning of Teague and the switch Horford-Howard kind of made Kent Bazemore a must re-sign. Like, I know a lot of people sort of cringed at first when the numbers came out on that deal, but they really couldn't afford to let their shooter on the wing go like that. I mean, they still have Korver, obviously, but Korver's been getting older, and it's been starting to be a little more noticeable. I think they had to pay for Bazemore. Do you agree?
I mean, I think that there's definitely a premium on wings at this point. You know, you look around the signings that were some of the, you know, if you look around at the 30 teams in the NBA and say what were some of the most disappointing signings, I think that, you know, some of the most disappointing signings were of centers, just because you look at the market for centers and some teams paid huge amounts for average centers and some teams, you know, paid very reasonable amounts for average centers. And I don't think you could say the same thing about the wing position. You look at, you know, an average to good wing, they were going to get a huge salary. There weren't any discounts for wing players. So when you look at a player like Bazemore, who's, you know, a really good locker guy, a good defender, you know, he really knows the system and fits it pretty well. You know, you kind of know that for a guy who's 27 years old and, you know, playing the wing, there really aren't going to be any discounts there. So if you wanted to keep him, you pretty much had to pay that. And the Hawks did. And I think he's really good fit for them for the next few seasons going forward.
I mean, yeah, I think Portland paid also huge contracts to two guys in Evan Turner and Alan Crabb, who both got a ton of money. I'd rather have Bazemore than either of them. They didn't pay as much to Mo Harkless, but I'd rather have Bazemore than Mo Harkless. Like, he's really good. I think it's kind of crazy that they lost Damari Carroll and then in steps Kent Bazemore, who's just sort of ready to take on the mantle. I don't know, he's quite as good a shooter as Damari Carroll. I don't know the numbers. He might be better. Who knows? Obviously, Damari had some injury problems last year. We hope that goes away. But I don't think they had a choice in paying him. I remember at first when the Chris Middleton deal came out, a couple people who didn't know anything about Chris Middleton said, like, who is this guy? Like, this is a trade throw-in from a trade for two Brandons. Like, why would he make that kind of money? And then last year, he scored 18 points per game, I think, and probably should have gotten All-Star looks, although he's just too fresh to really get them. That's just how All-Star is. Sort of transitioning over to Bucks. There's Well, there's two big news issues on the horizon right now. One of them is Greg Monroe. He's still on the Bucks. The other is Ray Allen, but I don't know that that really takes too much discussion at this point. I don't think he's going to get signed at this point. Do you think Greg Monroe starts the season with the Milwaukee Bucks, or do you think they get rid of him at some point?
Wow, that's hard to say. I mean, obviously they've committed so much money to the center position that you'd have to think that they're looking at, rejiggering that so that it's not a bunch of money going to three or four different people, when really you can only play one of them at center.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think at some point, yeah, with 1 year left on his deal, you know, he could very well start the season with the Bucks, but I don't think he'll be there beyond this season for sure. But, you know, who's there at the start of the season, it's hard to tell. But I clearly don't think he's in their long-term plans. As soon as you see the Plumlee deal, I think you knew that, okay, you know, Monroe is here for one season or less.
Yeah, I think the Plumlee deal really, for me, it certainly confirmed the no more Greg Monroe stuff. I mean, it was very strongly rumored at that point. It had been really since the trade deadline. It was weird. He didn't get an exit interview. No one really talked about him much. But now, you know, that deal happens, and you're like, okay, there's now money guaranteed to Henson and Plumlee for the next 4 years. That is like 23 or $24 million between them, I think, which is okay for two centers that are both pretty good in the long run in this cap. But then you also have Monroe for 15 this year, or maybe 16, actually. The thing for me, besides even Monroe, the Plumlee deal made me think about was, like, who's going to start if Monroe is gone? Like, Plumlee makes more than Henson now, and that could just be a function of the cap, but it could also be something else. Like, I don't really know who they'd go with. It feels like Henson deserves a shot. I feel like we've all been saying this for, like, 3 years now, that he deserves a shot. He still hasn't really gotten one. If, in an ideal world, I don't know, New Orleans says, sure, we'll take Greg Monroe somehow, we'll make it work in the cap, here's a second-round pick, the Bucks go sweet, and they dump him, who do you think gets the start out of Miles Plumlee or John Henson?
I think it'll be Plumlee just because of his rim-running skills. I think that's something that teams really covet at this point. And to go full box here, you know, just to backtrack a little bit, you know, like I said before, you know, the Hawks are really looking forward to Howard putting pressure on the rim. You know, maybe the best player in the NBA right now at putting pressure on the rim is DeAndre Jordan. But I think if you look at the numbers, you know, I think Howard falls into that category of, you know, maybe the second best rim runner in the NBA. You know, and you probably put a few other names in that discussion. But I think Plumlee is probably, if you look at the 30 starting NBA centers, if you count him as the starter because he was there a lot at the end of the season, mm-hmm. I think he's probably, you know, in the top half at least. He's good at making defenses have to commit a little bit when he rolls. And I think that's a better fit around Giannis and Jabari than what Henson does on offense. And so, you know, I think Henson's going to be sort of the backup rim protector, with Plumlee sort of doing his thing and bringing those rim rolls to the offense.
I think just thinking about it right now, I hadn't really prepared any thoughts on this before, but I think what you said is 100% correct, that Plumlee would be a better fit with the starters. He needs the ball less to be effective on offense because he's such a great alley-oop finisher. That's really like half his offense, half Giannis or whoever's tossing the oop. Dele, if these Olympics are any indication, Dele's pretty good at tossing him up to Andrew Bogut. Hopefully he can do that with Plumlee too. But Henson could be a nice second unit center because he can generate offense with that hook shot. So if you had Michael Carter-Williams maybe in instead, Giannis is taking a breather, throw in Henson, that's a nice little safety valve. He's really good at that hook shot. Like, he doesn't do too much else on offense. I mean, he'll obviously get some dunks and all that. But it's a little ridiculous how nice he is with that lefty hook. It's almost automatic.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what the numbers were this year. Were they as good as they were in previous seasons? I mean, I think it's, you know, it's probably an average shot. And again, it's so hard to work the ball into the low post these days that, you know, I don't know that it's something that's necessarily is a plus, but I think it's something that at least makes him an offensive threat so that he's not a minus.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think another thing that Henson could do really well on offense is work as an offensive rebounder. He's got really great timing, long wingspan. I think that's something that you know, over time, you know, after the hook shot, that's sort of his second best skill as a scorer, is just crash the board and see what you can get.
Yeah, and, he is.
You know, if you have a guy like Giannis at point, and if he's working with the backups, you know, it's nice having a point guard who can also protect the rim on the fast break. Yeah. And then you can let, you know, Henson sort of freelance a little bit on offensive rebounds and not have to worry as much about having a rim protector back there, because Giannis can do it.
Yeah, I don't know that there's much Giannis can't do. How do you fall in on point Giannis, the idea? Obviously, post All-Star break, I want to say it was like 18, 8, and 7 was what he averaged, points, assists, rebounds, or maybe backwards. It was a lot of all three of those numbers, which is very impressive. I checked the other day, no player in NBA history has averaged the numbers he averaged, if you look at blocks as well, post All-Star break last year for an entire season. It's never been done, because I think he had like 1.7 blocks per game as well. Are those numbers sustainable over a whole season to point Giannis, now that we got Dele here, who's an ideal, not really point guard to put next to him?
You know, I think those numbers could be partially inflated, especially with the assists, just because the Bucks were so injury depleted going down the stretch that they pretty much just had to run everything through Giannis at the end of the season. But I don't think that him being a ridiculously good NBA point guard on offense is a fluke at all. So even if the numbers with respect to assists don't carry up in quite the same way, I definitely think that he can run an NBA offense at the highest levels. You know, with Dele in the fold, I think, you know, you're going to have that secondary creator who can do a thing or two. And so I think that'll change the numbers a little bit from what was happening down the stretch last season. But at the same time, you know, they're going to be better as a team overall for having had Dellavedova in there with him. That's the right fit around Giannis, is somebody who can guard the point, you know, make a three-point shot, you know, and work as a secondary creator. So that's a nice fit.
Yeah, I was a huge fan of the signing, especially when you saw, you know, guys like, I'm trying to think of a good guard comparison, like players who didn't need $20 million a year getting $20 million a year, like Ryan Anderson. I mean, it's, you see a contract like that and you see, you know, Dele got like 9.5 or something like that for 4 years. Mirza Teletovic got 3 years, $30 million. I thought that was a great signing, especially compared to Ryan Anderson. Like, I think Ryan Anderson's probably the better player, but I don't think he's twice as good. So, like, I'll take Mirza for 10 before I'll take Anderson for 20. I thought the Bucks were sort of quiet in free agency, but they really did what they needed to do. I agree that Dele's the perfect fit. There's no better point forward to learn from than LeBron James. Probably the best point forward ever. Probably didn't need the probably there. I don't know if there's really that much competition for him.
Right.
He might be the best anything ever. I don't want to get into that right now, but LeBron's crazy good, I guess, is what I mean to say. The one other thing that for me could sort of deflate Giannis's assist numbers, maybe it could have the opposite effect, is I think we're going to see a lot more Jabari Parker this year. He's finally going to have an off season. Obviously last year he was rehabbing the ACL tear in his rookie season. He only played 25 games, I believe. Now he's played, I don't remember the number, but he missed a game actually after coming back. He missed like a couple early when he first came back, and then he pretty much played like the rest of the season through. He's healthy. He looked really good at the end of the year. I think we might see him get a lot more touches. Actually, I'm very confident in that. People kind of forget, especially like general NBA people, non-box people. There's a reason Jabari almost went first overall in 2014. Like, Jabari's going to be very good on offense.
Yeah, I agree. It just seems like there's some people that are sort of disappointed with how his career's gone so far. But, you know, the way I look at it is, you know, he's been around for two seasons. In the middle, he had a serious knee injury. He's come back, and he's looked more explosive after the knee injury than he did before. And that's really all you can ask for. I mean, he hasn't had a lot of time to work on his game. His, you know, it's been more work on rehab and conditioning and strength and things like that. So, you know, now that he's coming in with a full summer of having worked on his game, I think he'll be a much, much better player. And you know, I don't look at the first 2 years of his career as a disappointment at all. I mean, I think it's just, you know, he had a knee injury, and that it is what it is. But he worked through it, came back, and looked stronger, which, you know, combined with what looks like he's lost some weight this summer. Is that right?
Yeah, he looks a little, I mean, it's you know, NBA muscle watch. This happens every year. But he does look a little noticeably slimmer, yeah.
So you take that and, you know, what's he going to look like this season? I think he's going to look fantastic. And again, you know, going back to the Giannis assist numbers, I don't think it's going to be a product of him being disappointing. I think they'll go down just because when you have a more balanced offense, you're going to have assists come from more places than just the point guard. There's going to be the pass and the pass after the pass, and you'll see Giannis get more hockey assists than assists. You know, he'll be setting up the guy, defense will react, and then there'll be one more pass, and you'll get an even better shot. So, you know, if Jabari has a better season and Dele is a good fit, you know, I just think you'll see more balance overall from that offense.
Yeah, that's part of why, like, I know Snotty Drippin, a.k.a. James Hollis on Twitter, is the biggest Dele hater. And he's been, you know, preaching about how, you know, Dele's a trash player. Like, the signing doesn't make any sense. This is why they wanted Dele and why Dele's perfect, is because he is the fifth option on offense, no matter what, among the starters. No matter which of the three centers gets it, Dele's going to be number five. Like, I don't see him having enough touches on offense. I mean, he's going to shot create, like you said, for sure. But, like, enough, like, actually him trying to score, I don't see what he's really going to do besides spot up three-point shooting. I mean, you got Giannis is going to run the offense. He's going to take shots. Like, he should. He's great. Maybe it's a little too early for great. Maybe not, though, considering what he did after the break. You got Jabari growing into being a scoring threat. You still have Chris Middleton, who was fantastic last season, who was, you know, before last year, it was like, okay, he's a 3-and-D guy. He's very efficient. He's very good at that. Then all of a sudden last year, the Bucks were sort of like, oh, nothing is working. Chris, you're just going to be our go-to guy for the rest of the year. And he was like, all right, and he did it. His numbers didn't dip that much. He, like, made a huge increase on his per-game scoring from last year to this last season, or from 2 years ago to this past season. So he can obviously score the basketball almost at will sometimes. His post-up game is meh at this point, but most other things he does is very good. So it's just like, Dele's not going to have the ball enough to fuck anything up. Like, he just won't see the touches. I mean, he's a really good open three-point shooter. He's 39.6%, I want to say, career. He struggled in the playoffs last year, but Kyrie was back. They didn't need him to do very much, if anything. I just think, like you said, it's a perfect fit for them because of what he doesn't have to do. Like, Dele's not going to complain about shots. He just wants to win.
I agree. I mean, when you go back to, if we backtrack a little bit and talk about the value of their signings, I agree with you that Teletovic is a really good value signing for them. To get him to come to Milwaukee as a free agent, a guy that can shoot the three, a guy whose body is probably going to hold up better than Ryan Anderson's over time, I just think that was a great signing, and I really don't have any huge questions about, you know, whether that's going to be a value signing or not. I mean, I know there were the issues with blood clots or something like that, but still, I mean, if you think that's resolved, I think that's going to be a great signing. I think there are more questions about Dellavedova. You know, he's kind of a big name because he's been on the big stage in the postseason the last couple of seasons. And you have to worry about, you know, how much of it is a byproduct of him playing with LeBron, of him playing on the big stage. You know, but you look at that a couple of ways, you know, what he's doing with the Olympic team this summer is very encouraging because obviously he's doing that without LeBron. And second of all, I mean, I think this may sound crazy, but I think that LeBron's really the best comp for Giannis at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree.
If you look at LeBron's early career, you know, how many years did it take, you know, before he became the player that he is now? I mean, I know he had that one trip to the finals in 2007, but there wasn't a whole lot of early season or early career team success for him. So I don't think that Giannis's early career is that much different than what you're seeing with LeBron's early career. I mean, I think he can get up to that same kind of trajectory. I don't know if the Bucks can put a team around him like he had in Miami or like he has now in Cleveland, but I mean, just for the style of play, for being a massive point guard who can just be a huge force sucking in defenses because what he can do with the ball at his size, you know, I just think that LeBron's going to be really the best comp for that. And so then you look at Dellavedova and you say, well, if he did it for LeBron, he can do it for Giannis.
Yeah, I mean, he's proven at it. I mean, they didn't win in 20, what finals was that? 2014. No. Yes. No. 2015. They didn't win in 2015 when they went against the Warriors, and Dele was basically the starter after Kyrie got hurt. But he did well. I mean, in those finals, there was the stupid Curry stopper thing, which was dumb all along. Like, Dele's a good pesky defender. There's no such thing as a Curry stopper besides Stephen Curry. This is completely off topic, but I feel like this is something Curry does not get ragged on for nearly enough. Like, if you saw LeBron James dip in production like Stephen Curry did in those finals, we'd still be hearing about it from talking heads, like, right today. Like, he'd sign his deal, and the first thing someone would say is, like, yeah, but remember how he choked in the finals? Steph hasn't really gotten any of that, which makes me think that despite everyone saying the Warriors are villains, I'm not sure people are ready to hate Steph Curry yet. Because they could be right now, but they're not. Anyway, that's a random aside. I like Steph Curry, too. I'm one of the people, aforementioned people. But yeah, Dele's got the experience. He's been on championship stages. What I like about Dele is he says all the right things. My favorite Dele quote is, he was at the podium. He got a podium game, and I think it was the Bulls series, two playoffs ago. And they said, did you ever, you know, envision yourself being up here at the podium next to LeBron? And he was like, I never envision any of this fluff stuff. I just want to work and, like, help my team win. And I was like, that's the perfect quote for a guy who you signed to be the fifth man on offense. Like, that's exactly what you want to hear him say. He's like the anti-Schroeder, kind of.
Oh, I don't know about that.
No, I just wanted to sneak in a Schroeder diss. I don't mean that.
Trying to get a rise out of me.
Yeah.
Before we let it go here with Dellavedova, I just want to say that I think he's dirty as hell.
I was waiting for this.
I'm not like in Dellavedova's corner. I'm just saying from a basketball fit, I think he fits well with the Bucks. But I've seen enough plays from him over the years that it's like, yeah, I don't know.
I feel like he's certainly one of those where if he's not on your team, you hate him. And if he is, you just have to stick up for him. Like, to a certain degree, like, Cleveland was sad he left. Like, Cleveland did not like seeing him go. Like, I think he's on my team now, so I have to defend him. I'll be political about this. There are certainly questionable actions he has taken in the past on the basketball court. That's lawyer Ty talking. But I have to stick up for him now. Look what he does in the Olympics, like these alley-oops. I'm so ready for this on the Bucks. He celebrated winning the finals by playing beer pong with other role players on the Cavs. He belongs in Milwaukee. He was made for this. If he held up like a Miller Lite, it would have been perfect. I think it was a Corona, which is all right. I analyze beers now. This is what blogging has come to since you've left the blogosphere. We do stuff like this now.
Yeah, I don't know that I can add on to that.
Your beer drinking analysis is not my level yet. I've been honing my skills. There's another Buck that we should probably talk about. It's sort of to the back burner now because some of the more ridiculous conspiracy theories have died down. But Thon Maker, the 19-year-old, yes, 19-year-old internet commenters, Sudanese to Australian to Canadian to American. Sensation in Summer League at first. He sort of died down a little bit as the Summer League games went on. How do you feel about probably the most surprising draft pick of the 2016 NBA draft? That's very, very encouraging answer.
So raw. I mean, there's so much talent there. He's so raw. I mean, I think you just got to give him a couple of years. I mean, I don't know that he's a rotation player yet. He probably is. I mean, but at the maybe sort of the last rotation spot. I mean, it's hard to say. What position is he going to play going forward? What do you think?
I mean, that's tough, right? I mean, if you look at just ideally, like in a vacuum, I feel like probably power forward. I don't know if he'll ever get big enough to play center. Like, he's obviously going to develop more. He is 19. Like, if you look at Giannis when Giannis got drafted, he probably looked to be about that skinny. Giannis is pretty buff now. So maybe if he gets bigger, I could see center, but I feel like play style wise, he's more Kevin Love than like Marc Gasol, like a sort of stretchy center like that. Like, I just don't know if he'll ever be big enough to hold up. I'm sure he can play minutes at center in lineups. I just don't think you want to start him there. But then you look at the Bucks, and it's like, there's no way this guy's going to play power forward as long as Giannis and Jabari are here. You're not going to slide, and you know Chris is going to be starting as well. You don't want to play Giannis at point guard, so he has to guard point guards. That probably won't work very well. He's fast, but not fast enough to really guard point guards all the time. So you can't start, you know, Giannis, Chris, Jabari. You wouldn't want Jabari at small forward either, I don't think. But Giannis, Chris, Jabari, Maker, and then a center. That's team all length for real. I don't know if it really works that well, though. So I'm thinking on the Bucks, maybe they want him to be a center someday. But mostly I feel like, and this is just speculation, I feel like this pick was, we don't plan on being in the lottery for a while. I think the Bucks look to be a low playoff team this year. I think they'll certainly fight for it if they stay healthy, just based on leaps that all these young players keep looking to make. So I think they're saying, look, we want to be, you know, 7th, 8th seed, at least fighting for it this year. If we're in the lottery, we're like 14th. After this next year, we want to be playoffs, you know, finals. Like, that's the timeline. It's starting to become less 2 years from being 2 years away in Milwaukee right now. This might be our last lottery pick for years. Let's just take a swing for the fences. Like, let's just go for it. And if we hit a home run, and this guy could be the future of the NBA, a 40% shooting center who can run down the court and dribble and do all these other things. If we miss, we still have our young core. The Bucks don't need Thon Maker to be great to potentially be a really good team one day. Like, you look at it, Giannis, like you said, is LeBron-esque, at least in some ways. Jabari Parker still has a lot of room to grow. Chris Middleton's already proven he's really good. I mean, you add one more good player to that mix a few years from now, and they have the chance to be great. They don't need it to be Thon Maker, but if it is, then they already have him. So good for the Bucks.
Yeah, I agree with it, that the Bucks probably drafted as if they weren't going to be in the lottery for a while. So you try to take the best player available. You know, he's got a lot of skill. I don't know what his NBA position is. I don't think we necessarily need to know that yet. It sort of feels a little bit like the Giannis draft pick, where you're just drafting the best player available. But I think that Giannis, just because of his ball handling skills at that point, was much more of a sure thing than Maker is, and, you know, more of a steal in a weaker draft overall.
Yeah.
At a lower position. You know, would Giannis go 14th, 15th, something like that?
15th, I want to say.
15th in a draft that was really, truly horrifyingly bad.
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, combine that with the fact that his ball handling skills were just ridiculous at that point. You know, getting the best player available felt better there than it did maybe this season with Maker in a deeper draft at 10. It was 10, right?
Yeah, it was 10th overall.
So I think it's a little bit more dicey. What do you think about the whole Schwartz thing?
It's been something that, you know, has been going on for a while. The agent that represents Jason Kidd, and also now several of the Bucks players. Especially,
what's the full list?
I'd have to pull up the full list. I don't actually have it down.
Okay.
I'm gonna Google it real quick, because it's a fairly extensive list, if I remember right. Jeff Schwartz, clients, Bucks. I'm sure someone's done an article on this. Maybe not. Jeff Schwartz, agent client list, real GM. So let's go down the list here. And to be fair, there are a lot of players on this list that are not Bucks. Former Buck, now Jared Bayless, Michael Carter-Williams, Tyler Ennis, Hawk Jarrett Jack, Brandon Jennings, former Buck. I don't know if that really played anything. Jason Kidd. Ooh, I thought that there was a new rule introduced where you couldn't have coaches and players represented by the same group, but I guess it hasn't taken into effect yet? Question mark. I really have no idea on that one.
Yeah, and I think that will be easily masked by, you know, agencies that have lots of different representations, and then you just kind of have one agent that works for the coaches, one agent that works for the players, but they're really all under the same umbrella. I mean, that's going to be really hard to enforce.
Yeah. Mirza Teletovic and Rashad Vaughn also are Schwartz clients. So, a lot of Bucks for sure. I think Thon Maker is too. He's not on this list, but
right.
I'm pretty sure he is.
Yeah. And again, I think, you know, with Thon Maker, it isn't necessarily Schwartz, but it's somebody else that works for that same company under the same umbrella.
Yeah, the Excel Sports Management, I think it is, or something like that.
Yeah, so it's, you know, that's the one thing about the Maker thing. Not that, I mean, I'm not saying that played any consideration at all, but, you know, it makes you at least double take for a second and a half.
Yeah, well, I mean, this whole, like, I feel like most of the things the new ownership of the Bucks have done thus far have been, like, very good. Like, keeping the team in Milwaukee was obviously an important first step to winning me over. A lot of people at the time were like, well, if they go to Seattle, would you still be a fan? And I was like, definitely not. That would be my least favorite team. I don't know who I would have been a fan of. Maybe I would have sent letters to the other 29 teams, like this guy on Reddit did after the Supersonics left. I don't know what I would have done. But anyway, that's a random aside. They've done other good things, though. Like, the kid thing was, at the time, it was like, oh, that's, you know, it's kind of like a shady move to sort of, like, steal him from Brooklyn. And the way they fired Larry Drew kind of super late. Like, Larry Drew was at the Giannis or the Jabari press conference. And then, like, a week later was no longer with the Bucks. So I was kind of like, oh, it's kind of a dick move. But really, like, the only other things where you go, oh, I don't like that, have been front office stuff. Like, for a while last year, it felt like Jason Kidd was making the decisions because they were just really, like, weird and uncharacteristic for John Hammond. Like, the Grievous Vasquez trade was still awful. Like, no matter what filter you put it on, like, they didn't need another point guard. He got hurt anyway, but they didn't need one in the first place. And they gave up a first-round pick for him. And in the rising cap, like, there's not much more valuable than first-round picks right now. Like, why Grievous Vasquez on an expiring deal when they just went and used that money to get, what's his name? Corey Joseph anyway. So I didn't like that. There were some other trades, like dumping, Dudley and Zaza and Ersan for basically nothing, which the Ersan deal was pretty bad, but like the Dudley contract, like they should have found a way to keep Dudley. Like they needed him last year. They didn't have him because they traded him for a top 55 protected pick. So things like that, it was for a while, there was this rumor that Kidd was running the front office, something that Woj ran with a lot. And then, I don't know, to quiet that or what, they now bring in Justin Zanuck from the Jazz, who's now the, quote, GM in waiting for a year while John Hammond's still there. And he might not leave after that. He might just take a different position. And is this, like, just a move to block Kidd from the front office? And then right after that, Kidd gets extended. So I guess he's okay with it. It's all very confusing. And there's not been much, like, light shed on it, certainly by the team or even by, like, Woj or outside sources. So that's been the one thing where you're just sort of like who's actually, like, running the front office? It's been unclear.
Yeah, and I think the Zana thing is, now I'm rambling things off the top of my head here without double-checking, but I think Zana, before he was with the Jazz, was with a different agent group that's not the Schwartz group, and I think that's going to help the Bucks over the long run. Just because, you know, I think we lose sight of how important the relationships between teams and agents are. That, you know, even if we not ding the Bucks for saying, oh, they're too tied with the Schwartz group, you know, that kind of thing is helpful. Because, you know, when they have a free agent, you can put your name in the hat and say, hey, you know, you work well with us before, you know, we know each other, come to this team and you know you'll get a square deal. And, you know, so those relationships are really important. You see teams trying to make deals where even if they send a player away, they want to keep a good relationship with the agency so they make sure that it's a favorable situation that they send the player to. I think that's something that the Bucks have done well. You know, I think they did it in the Jared Dudley case. You know, they were trying to get him to a place he wanted to go as a gesture of good faith to the player and the organization. And so, you know, I think the Zana thing's going to work out really well in that regard, just to have, you know, ties to another agency where you know that they're going to have a good faith relationship.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, we dinged them for it before, but, I mean, Mirza Teletovic maybe not a Buck if there's not the Schwartz connection. Right. I mean, that's obviously speculation. There's no way to know for sure, but it certainly didn't hurt matters any in getting him on a very reasonable deal considering the cap. This front office stuff is also, like, it's you don't realize until you really start focusing on the NBA and especially on specific teams. Like, you just sort of assume, like, there's a general manager and he signs players and that's it. It's very complicated. Like, more people than you'd think have a say. Like, in Cleveland, LeBron gets a say. And of course he does. Like, it makes sense that he does. You don't want him to leave again. But it's just very interesting, like, how many voices end up determining an NBA team. Like, I think probably most of the great franchises, probably, like, the number is smaller. Like, I think Pop and R.C. Buford are making most of the calls in San Antonio. I don't know, you know, how many other voices are getting into that situation. I'm sure they ask all sorts of people. They surround themselves with great people around them. So that's, I don't know, maybe I'm just talking out of my ass. I don't know what I'm saying anymore. I guess smart people run teams well is the gist. But I just think, like, the most important thing is everyone being on the same page. I feel like that's something that we'll have to focus on with the Bucks going forward. Like, last year I would have said it felt like there was sort of two somewhat conflicting voices. Like, one sort of, let's go long-term, one sort of, let's get some veterans and win right now. Like, let's sign Greg Monroe and just go for it at the moment. This summer, though, I felt like the vision has been very unified. I mean, they brought in four guys who can supposedly shoot. Everything with Thon is supposedly right now. But Malcolm Brogdon can shoot. He was really good in college. And Teletovic and Dellavedova can both shoot really well. So it sort of feels like that's what we're doing. Like, we're going for value guys who can shoot, sort of play defense, mostly just Dellavedova and Brogdon, though, if he holds up. And we're not breaking the bank anymore, except on Plumlee, but that was a re-sign. That's a little different. I'm hoping that this means the Bucks have finally realized we don't have to go spend a bunch right now. Like, we don't have to go sign Dwight Howard. And that's not a shade to the Hawks. They kind of did need to sign Dwight Howard. But the Bucks don't need someone like that. They just need to grow this core. And like you said, can they surround Giannis and Jabari with the right pieces? It looks like right now, kind of. Like, this team's not going to contend, obviously, this coming season. But I think the recipe for them to be very good is not adding another really expensive, flashy player. I feel like it's add the right guys around these three, mostly two, but I'd still say three, to really exemplify their core skills. I think that's the right path for this team.
Sure, and it could change based on what happens over the next year or two. But, you know, this summer, that's definitely the right approach.
Do you think they're going to need to add, like, another big deal player?
I don't think you know that yet. And, you know, you've got to take everything in the context of the deals that are going to have to come going forward. Giannis is going to get a lot of money very soon.
Yeah.
And that's going to change, you know, what their cap situation, you know, what their overall team acquisition scheme looks like. So you have to sort of play that out this year and see how these pieces fit together. And, you know, maybe it involves, you know, trading somebody, going a different way. But for right now, I think they're doing the right things, you know, trying to get shooting, trying to get defenders, not trying to necessarily get a big name. You know, it seems like they're doing the right sorts of things.
They're probably a little gun-shy after the whole Greg Monroe thing on big names for the moment. We finally got one, and this is what happens? Can't blame them.
Yeah,
that.
I did not like that signing from the first minute. I mean, I knew that was a big moment for the Bucks just because they got a big free agent to come, but I didn't think that he was a good fit at all. I don't know.
I wanted to believe so bad. I was like, they got him. They got Greg Monroe. Like, he's got talent. I'm sure they'll figure out a way to make it fit. It's like famous last words in NBA parlance. I'm sure they'll figure out a way to make it fit with Dwight Howard, Kobe, and Steve Nash. Of course that'll work out. There's so much talent there. It doesn't always. Like, the case to watch for that going forward, I think, is the Warriors. Is the Warriors going to fit? Like, you'd think so, theoretically. You know, they're all shooters. They should all be able to play together. There shouldn't be a problem. But I feel like any time you just make such a dramatic shift in adding a talented player. And Kevin Durant's much more talented and versatile than Greg Monroe, obviously. But I still feel like there's a chance that, you know, things aren't, you know, 80 wins and a title for Golden State right away this coming year. Like, I feel like there's a chance it doesn't work 100%. Like, I don't think they're going to be, like, horrible. They're not going to miss the playoffs if everyone's healthy, obviously. But I could see a scenario where everything doesn't click, at least right away.
Yeah, that's fair. And, you know, injuries are a risk and things like that. I mean, I really don't think it's going to be a bad basketball fit. I think they're going to be terrific. I think they have issues at center. I don't think they're a very big team. You know, getting Zaza is going to be really big for them. But, you know, I think in the playoffs, not having a center, you know, really hurt them a lot. And I still think they have that issue. But as far as how Durant fits, I think he's going to fit in great. I think it's nice to have, you know, the two best shooters and then add Kevin Durant. It's just, it's unfair.
Yeah, it is.
It's just unfair. I think teams are going to get better at reacting to the Draymond at center thing. I think, you know, just more years, more ideas, more examples. I think, you know, teams like, you know, Utah and Oklahoma City have kind of laid down some good blueprints for how to go at that. And I think other teams will follow their lead. And then the question of, you know, who are the Warriors going to throw out there at center when that doesn't work becomes a bigger question for them. So I don't feel like they're any way like a guarantee to win a championship, but they're still going to be a ridiculous team.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and this is, we're all completely off topic now, but this is just what happens with timeout with Ty. I think really, like, any team trying to run with them and play small is dead. Like, there's no group of personnel really left. If you, like, assembled the other 29 teams, I don't know if you can make a small ball team as good as the Warriors. Like, they have all the best pieces for it right now. I think the key to beating them is how Cleveland almost did it, and in the finals they lost, is just go huge. Like, they went to 6 games without Kevin Love or Kyrie Irving because they just pounded the boards. And it sort of works on them. Like, they don't, even when they had Festus Ezeli and Andrew Bogut, like, they couldn't really keep up, especially when they went small. They don't have either of those guys anymore. Like, I think, I don't think the Thunder would win a series against them, but, like, I think the Thunder would make it interesting if they threw out Cantor, Steven Adams lineups, because they're going to grab, like, a lot of rebounds. They can just reload Russ all day. And I think that's really, like, it throws them out of rhythm. You bang them up a little bit on the inside, whoever you can switch onto one of those bigs. Like, I think that's the only way you beat them. I don't think you can play, you know, a small forward at the 4 and someone kind of stretchy at the 5 and 3 other shooters. Like, I just don't think if you go to their level, you'll be able to compete with them. I think you need to drag them out of their comfort zone. Like, I think that's why they lost the finals last year, is that the Cavaliers just punched them in the mouth right away. Really, the Thunder did it for them, but they got punched in the mouth with that big ball. They'd never really lost like that before in the playoffs, and they just weren't ready for it, and it sort of threw them off for the rest of the postseason. I think that's the only way you beat them, unless like something really weird happens and it doesn't work, which I don't think it's likely it doesn't work. I just think it's possible, for the record.
Yeah, that sounds right to me. I don't know what teams in the West are capable of doing it. I mean, I think if you could work in some alternate universe where Durant was still on the Warriors and Oklahoma City at the same time, I think Oklahoma City would be a great match for them to take them out. But I think taking Durant off of OKC kind of eliminates them from being able to do what they did in this last postseason.
Yeah.
And then you look at the other teams out West. I mean, I don't think San Antonio can do that to them. I don't think that they can go super big and pound them. I just don't know what teams in the West can keep the Warriors out of the finals. I mean, I think, you know, Cleveland obviously can do it. I just don't know that anybody in the West can.
If only the Hawks were in the West. Millsap and Dwight Howard, they'd give them problems for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think Millsap is a good comp for Draymond in a lot of ways. I think they do a lot of the same things. I was wondering, you know, one of the hypothetical exercises I was sort of playing out in my mind before the whole free agency period was, you know, how much can they use Millsap at center if Horford leaves? And obviously that's much different now with Howard in the fold, but I felt like, you know, they might be using Millsap at center almost as much as the Warriors use Draymond at center if they had, you know, lost Horford and not gotten Howard. but maybe we'll never see that. But I think that could be, you know, Millsap's future going forward someday as the ridiculous small ball center. He has that kind of skill set.
Yeah, well, I mean, if, you know, Dwight's got to sit out a couple games, you know, he tweaks something, he's a little hurt, maybe we could see it then, too.
It's possible. I don't know, you know, I think Splitter is going to have a better season. I think he's just going to be a lot healthier than he was last year, and so maybe you don't need that as much as well. So we may not see it as much as we saw last season. And I thought the front court of Mike Scott and Millsap with those two up front was a great combination for them last season, but I don't know if they'll be able to use it as much this season with Howard and potentially a healthier Splitter.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch for sure. I think what kind of expectations do you have real quick before we wrap up here for these two teams? Like, do you think Bucks and Hawks both in the playoffs? One misses, one makes. I don't think they both miss.
I think for the Bucks, I feel like it's a fair expectation that they're going to be sort of along the lines of where they were 2 years ago. I think 2 years ago they overperformed. Last season they underperformed. But I think with what they have this season, given the fact that they're more experienced with that young core, I think, you know, I think they finish sort of like they did with the 2015 team. For the Hawks, you know, it's such a crapshoot. You know, they've changed so much from just 2 years ago, right? Of that, the January 2015 player of the month, it was Horford, Millsap, Carroll, Korver, and Teague, and just two of those guys remain.
Yeah.
Korver and Millsap. So they're such a different team that I don't know that they know who they are yet. It's going to be so different with Schroeder and Howard as the core. I mean, I think maybe the two most prominent players of the Hawks style the last couple of seasons have been Teague and Horford. You know, Horford with his, you know, shooting threes and spacing the floor and being a great defender, and Teague just kind of as an overall offensive player who is, you know, really good at getting the ball to the right places. Now you look at it this season, and I think Schroeder and Howard are improvements in a lot of ways. Schroeder's going to be a really good defender, I think, for the Hawks in a way that maybe Teague wasn't. And Howard's going to be such a great rebounder, but then you just look at all those other question marks, and it's, you know, such a huge window for what they could be and what they might not be. But I have no idea what the Hawks are going to be this season.
You're just going to ride with it.
I think I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, I think so too. I think the East is going to be fun, though. I think a lot of teams re-upped in very interesting ways. Like, I like what the Pacers did. Obviously, the Celtics are going to be very good. I could see the Raptors taking a step back. I think they lost some important pieces, although they kept the most important one on the market for them. It'll be really interesting, though. I think, like, the Pistons, I think, could be a top four seed. Like, I really love the bench they added. I think Andre Drummond's fantastic. It'll be fun to watch. Last question. Were you surprised that the Hawks shook up the January Player of the Month and changed up the team so much? Like, they were obviously successful with the group they had, but it seemed like maybe peaked at the 60 wins, which is obviously, that's a great peak. If that's your peak is 60 wins, you can't really complain. But did it take you by surprise at all?
It's hard to say. I mean, if you go sort of player by player, you know, with Carroll, I think they wanted to keep him. They just couldn't. You know, just the cap rules said that they couldn't have Millsap and Carroll. So those were two of the five guys, and they went obviously with the more important piece, which was Millsap. So, you know, on the Carroll front, you know, they just didn't have the choice. They didn't have that option of getting both players. So that one wasn't a surprise. You know, with Horford, you know, there were signs of posturing early on. He changed agents not once, but twice before the free agency period. So, you know, you knew that there were things happening where, you know, there was, you could just see the strategies and people trying to get prepared in that way, just in those two decisions. So, there was always that realization that, you know, that was a real possibility. That he wanted a max contract, and maybe he was worried that the Hawks weren't going to give it, and you could just kind of see both sides lining up there a little bit. And then with Teague, you know, they had the weird situation of they've got two starting caliber point guards, and both are going to be free agents in the summer of 2017. So, you know, that wasn't a huge surprise there, just because obviously you don't go and, you know, give two players at the same position two gigantic contracts.
If the Bucks, you do it with
in
three.
The same summer. What's that?
If you're the Bucks, you do it with three, and they're all centers.
Yeah, I was just thinking that. That's true. I was running through that in my head. I was like, yeah, that's going to sound bad. We were just talking about that 20 minutes ago.
Well, we didn't come to the conclusion it was a good decision by the Bucks, so I think you're good.
Okay, good. So, yeah, just because they have, we're both going to be free agents in the same summer, you know, there was always that tension. Well, they're going to have to make a decision. That was at least, you know, what I think most logical decision makers would seek as the likely outcome of that setup.
Yeah, so I think, like, you look at it from, you know, a wide perspective back up, like a casual NBA fan would go, wow, it's weird that the Hawks would break up their core, you know, they won 60 games. But if you look at, like you said, individually, all the moves make sense. Like, the Hawks didn't panic and just start dumping guys. They moved in a calculated manner, and that's why they're going to be good next year. Like, they've been good for the last several years now. Any last-minute things you'd like to add? Did we miss anything you wanted to talk about?
I mean, I don't think so. I think that just about covers it.
I think we got all the box stuff done and done for now. Hopefully no more news breaks before I can get this posted, probably today on Saturday. Any plugs you'd like to make? Anything you want to plug? Any pieces? Where can we find your work? I think I forgot to introduce you properly. I just figured people would know.
I write for Hawks.com. If you go to Hawks.com and put my last name in the search bar there, Chouinard, you'll probably come up with a long list of the things that I've had up there. I haven't done too much this summer just because, you know, it's the summer and other than some free agent signings, not that much has happened, but we'll see. I mean, it's crazy that we're only how many weeks from the start of camp? Maybe 6 weeks?
It's getting there, thankfully.
It's going fast. The off season isn't going to last long. And, you know, we'll have the Olympics and some, you know, European qualification tournaments. And then we'll blink and, you know, it'll be late September and teams will be in camp.
So then we'll have even more stories from you to look forward to reading. You can check out the site.
Then we'll crank it out.
Yeah, then we'll crank it out. We've been cranking it out anyway. We'll keep cranking it out, though. Don't worry. At Behind the Buck Pass, where KL used to write for. Edit or write? Were you an editor there?
What's that?
Were you an editor at Behind the Buck Pass?
Oh, yeah. Here's the story.
Okay.
Here's a good way to end it.
Here we go.
All right. So what is it? I was writing for the site in 2010. You know, it was a fan-sided site.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't called Behind the Buck Pass at the time.
Ooh, what was it then? I need this history lesson.
Yeah, here's the real story. So I think it was 2010 I was writing for them, and, you know, I wanted to do some more detailed work, and so I was trying to get credentialed for a game. But the site at the time was called We're Bucked. B-U-C-K-E-D, which, you know, is a really awkward name when you're trying to apply for media credentials. So we needed a new name if we were going to be legit. And I was working with Jake McCormick, who's a friend of Jeremy Schmidt at Bucksketball, and it's actually Jeremy who came up with the name Behind the Buck Pass.
Oh.
And so, yeah, so around there in 2010, we switched from We're Bucked to Behind the Buck Pass. Thanks to Jeremy's innovation with the name, that he's very good with the Bucks puns.
I guess, yeah. Bucksketball is a masterpiece. moment of silence for Bucksketball, I guess, which is at least momentarily retired. That came out the other day. There's a couple Bucks blogs that are really big. I mean, there's Bucksketball, there's Brew Hoop, and I would say this Behind the Buck Pass. I hope we're in the conversation at least. Bucksketball is quiet now, which is definitely weird considering they were like one of the big dogs we were trying to catch up with when Adam and I really got started at the site. So, thanks for the name, Jeremy. I don't know if we're bucked would be keeping up like behind the puck passes right now. When I first was going to do this podcast, it used to be affiliated with the site. It's no longer. Timeout with Ty is now independent. Please follow me on iTunes. There's my plug. I wanted to call it What the Buck, and Adam was like, no, trust me, we don't want to do these. We don't want to do those kind of puns. Go with something safe. Go with Timeout with Ty. And I was like, all right, that's better anyway. That should do it. Check out joeyburbs.com. Joey Burbs does the intro and outro music to this podcast. I almost forgot to plug Joey, but I didn't forget. Check out Timeout with Ty on SoundCloud, iTunes, and Stitcher. Check out KL's stuff. Follow him on Twitter. Now at KL Chouinard, I believe. It used to be Anaheim right. Amigos, but now you got the official one.
Yeah, that was always a great source of confusion when I would live in one town, you know, right about the Bucks or the Hawks, and live in a third town, that confused the heck out of people. So we had to consolidate, and we retired Anaheim Amigos, sadly.
It's in the rafters now. Thanks for stopping by, KL.
All right, thanks. It was fun.
It was. Have a good one.